Just in the past week or so, Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin appeared on Saturday Night Live, John McCain was on The Late Show with David Letterman, and Michelle Obama went on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Why are these comedy shows becoming regular campaign stops for presidential candidates or their surrogates? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 6 on this Tuesday, October the 21st. And we will talk about whether the campaigns are doing themselves some good or not by showing their funny side. And we'll welcome your reviews of how the candidates performed. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a comment. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Joseph Foy. He's a professor of political science at UW-Waukesha and author of Homer Simpson Goes to Washington, American Politics Through Popular Culture. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. You're becoming a regular on the program. Hope you don't mind.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you and all your guests. So yeah. It's still quite an honor for me.
Well, I'm glad that you could join us. Well, SNL got its best ratings in 14 years, it says here, with the Sarah Palin appearance. So obviously SNL doing itself some good by getting candidates like Sarah Palin on the air. But did Sarah Palin do herself any good?
Well, you know, the reactions to Sarah Palin's appearance were relatively mixed. There were some that felt as though Sarah Palin going on was a good move for the campaign, that not only does it get her out in the public image, that it was in front of an estimated 14 million viewers, and it showed that she could also sort of poke fun at herself along with some of the actors on Saturday Night Live, and yet some of the other reviews were that, you know, we don't need to know that Sarah Palin is comedic and approachable. That's been her persona all along. That instead of adding that degree of thoughtfulness and gravity to the campaign that especially independent voters are really looking from Sarah Palin, that this just sort of continued the circus and the celebrity. Rather than a sort of thoughtful commentary about the campaign or her leadership.
Yeah. So why make the decision? Why would Sarah Palin say, "Sure, I'll go on this"?
Well, primarily because politicians like to imitate success, and this has been a successful strategy since Richard Nixon actually first appeared on Roland and Martin's Laugh-In in 1968. At the time, he was engaged in a pretty heated campaign with Hubert Humphrey, and they brought him on to deliver one line, and that line was the catchphrase "Sock it to me." And when Nixon went on, he appeared for roughly 4 seconds was all that he was on there, and he delivered the line sort of like "Sock it to me,"
right.
as if he was confused by what this line was supposed to be, like he'd never heard it before, and yet for people who were watching it became a really adorable human moment for Richard Nixon. Finally, they could connect with him. He became a human being for them. And whether or not it actually impacted the outcome of the campaign, Hubert Humphrey was sort of later quoted as saying that he felt as though not accepting Roland Martin's offer to go on to Laugh-In may have, in fact, cost him the election. So soon candidates begin to go on these kinds of comedic circuits to try to make those kinds of very human connections because, again, they like to imitate that type of success.
But SNL has been mocking Sarah Palin for weeks with Tina Fey doing that dead-on impersonation of her. Didn't she have a, wasn't she taking a risk by doing this?
I think actually it's a little bit of the opposite. I mean, here's where I think that Sarah Palin, even though her appearance doesn't really add that degree of gravity to the campaign, what it enables her to do is appear on screen with Tina Fey, even though it was just a brief minute moment in passing that they were both on screen together, and it enables viewers then to see the parody juxtaposed against the real person. And so we begin to see the sort of overemphasis on certain characteristics that are played out. And then what it also enables her to do is it enables her to really demystify or disempower some of these criticisms that such satire can perform. You know, if she's able to sort of poke fun at herself and laugh along with the actors and the audience of Saturday Night Live, it sort of sends a message that that's to the effect of, look, I'm not really worried about these sorts of things, so why should you be?
We're talking with Joseph Foy. He's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Waukesha. He's the author of Homer Simpson Goes to Washington, American Politics Through Popular Culture. We're talking with him about politics and popular culture with the appearance of Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live this past Saturday, and the other presidential candidates or vice presidential candidates or their wives or surrogates also appearing on these entertainment shows and comedy shows. Is this a good idea or not? We welcome your thoughts. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 21st. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. The federal deficit will continue to grow as the U.S. wrestles with the banking and mortgage monetary crisis and falling tax revenues. After 4, Ben and his guest will discuss rethinking the deficit through tough economic times. That's coming up this afternoon after 4 o'clock. We're talking about why funny shows, why comedy shows are becoming a serious part of the race for president this hour, with Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live this past weekend, John McCain also on Letterman, Michelle Obama on The Daily Show, and other appearances throughout this election season, with Joseph Foy, professor of political science at UW-Waukesha. And we welcome your thoughts, your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And we start with John in Libertyville. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering, I've noticed that it seems like they've wanted to get on these shows because it seems like the higher the negativity ratings have gotten, the more it seems like they want to be on these shows to take the edge off or to say, you know, I'm really not such a creep after all. You know, I'm kind of a nice person. You know, that's just the campaign, but this is the real me. And, you know, McCain and Palin both have really high negativity ratings. And people have also said that Michelle Obama is kind of mean. So I'm just wondering if you think there's a correlation there at all.
Professor Foy.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think that that's a very astute observation, that that when candidates are going on these shows, it does enable them to sort of step down from the public perceptions as well as some of the parodies that are being done, even on some of these shows. John McCain going on to Letterman is a way of sort of disempowering, again, that Letterman critique after John McCain had to stand Letterman up previously for an interview. And so when there's a lot of sort of growing negativity or growing hostility about the public persona of a candidate, then when they go on to these types of comedy shows, then they're able to make a very human connection with an audience. And I think that John raises a really good point there.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John. Let's take a listen to John McCain's appearance on David Letterman. This was last Thursday night. And as mentioned, this was a make good because he had a scheduled appearance with Letterman and then canceled it during the start of the financial crisis, said he had to rush back to Washington to, you know, to deal with this crisis. But then Letterman saw him getting made up for an interview with Katie Couric and Letterman made a lot of hay out of that over, you know, a couple of weeks, didn't he, Professor?
Absolutely.
Boy?
Absolutely. Mm. Even down to, you know, sort of showing the bus moving from the hotel to Katie Couric's studio, which went right past Letterman, and then the bus right back, which went back. I mean, he really did, you know, sort of emphasize that and highlight it for all it was worth. And it drew big ratings when McCain ended up appearing. I think that there were roughly 6.5 million people that tuned in during that October 16th appearance.
Yeah, and here is here he is from last Thursday on David Letterman.
What now? What exactly happened? I See, here, I thought I was doing my part to save the economy. And then later I get to think, maybe I'm just not important enough.
Can I give you an answer?
Please.
I screwed up.
So is all forgiven now, you think, Professor Foy?
Well, I think that what it does is it sort of prevents Letterman from continuing to make hay out of it. Whether or not all is forgiven between the two of them, and whether or not Dave actually took it as a personal slight that McCain wouldn't appear on his show, or if he was just using it as a punchline because it did resonate so much, what it does do is it at least disarms that potential criticism in the future.
Yeah, but how about the audience? Did the audience accept, okay, John screwed up, and so that's okay?
I think that that kind of self-effacing approach, the sort of humility that McCain is willing to show, I think, again, the audience gets a big laugh out of it, but it sort of takes the winds out of the sails of that type of criticism. Now, of course, there are many other bombs out there that would have to be disarmed by all of these candidates, but certainly that was a major one, and so it was a big step for McCain to make that appearance and sort of accept his lumps and move on.
Yeah. Let's take Ed in West Allis next. Hi, Ed, you're on the air.
Shows, and not just comedic shows, but talk shows, have tremendous power. We have to remember Oprah's kiss of George Bush in the fall of 2000, the number of votes that garnered Mr. Bush. And then on Saturday Night Live this week, we had the absolute disaster. Sarah Palin has this cobra charm over the American public, and here you had Alec Baldwin spouting off about her to Lorne Michaels, and then all of a sudden Palin stands next to her, and Baldwin just capitulates, and instead of a cat fight between Ms. Fay and Ms. Palin, Tina Fey, when confronted with Ms. Palin, just walks off the set. So I think that this was a net gain for Ms. Palin on Saturday night, though whether or not it's going to change the numbers drastically, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, Ed. Thanks. Let me play the a clip of Alec Baldwin was talking to the real Sarah Palin, confusing her at first for Tina Fey.
I mean, this is the most important election in our nation's history, and you want her, our Tina, to go out there and stand there with that horrible woman? What do you have to say for yourself,
Alec? This is Governor Palin.
Hi there.
I see. Forgive me, but I feel I must say this. You are way hotter in person.
So did that turn out to be then a net gain for Sarah Palin, Professor Foy?
Well, I think that that in the end, when candidates go on or their surrogates go on to these types of shows, what they're doing is they're making a connection with the undecided voter. What all of our research seems to indicate is that, people who are tuning in to Meet the Press or to Fox News Sunday, these are individuals who have already made up their mind about who they're going to vote for, and they're highly interested in politics. And so being able to go on to these types of shows, it may not have a drastic effect on those who have already made up their mind, but with, roughly, like I said, 14 million people tuning in to Saturday Night Live when Governor Palin was on, the 6.5 million that tuned in when McCain was on David Letterman, or the roughly, the average 2 million voters that tune in to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart each night. I mean, that's resonating then usually with those individuals who up to that point are undecided or relatively disaffected. And this is where they're finding out information about these candidates. So whereas Ed is likely to be right that it's not going to change anybody's opinion if they have already made up their minds about a candidate, it could very well connect with some of those important independent or moderate voters.
And then when Alec Baldwin said that Sarah Palin was way hotter in person, we didn't include that in the clip, but didn't Sarah Palin say something like, she thought that the hottest Baldwin brother was Dan, I think his name is.
Stephen Baldwin.
I'm sorry, yeah. Who happens to be a McCain supporter.
Right. And Stephen Baldwin is a name that would really resonate amongst Christian conservatives because he has been an active spokesperson for a number of Christian movements in the United States. And so, you know, by sort of disarming again that initial comment and turning it around, it's a way of making connections with voters who are familiar, and who would likely be supportive of Palin, but it also shows those undecided voters, look, I'm willing to take these kinds of jokes, and I'm willing to respond in kind.
Yeah, now I don't remember Oprah's kiss of President George W. Bush. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of controversy that initially started actually when then Vice President Al Gore had appeared on Oprah's show, and there was in Oprah sort of leaned in for that welcome kiss, and Al Gore had turned his face to look at somebody else. And so it became this sort of moment of controversy where it seemed as though Al Gore was sort of denying Oprah that kind of welcoming kiss. And so when Bush was later invited onto the show, he made sure that he actually went into, to make sure that that kiss was initiated to sort of play off of that initial perception. And so here's where we have, I think, one of the real issues, sort of the downside for democracy in general to these types of instances, that we get an enlargement of those kind of trivial details that then get amplified over and over and over again, and then become a part really of the political dialogue. And so that kind of trivial moment, which still resonates with voters, as Ed still recalls that as being a pivotal moment, at least for him, with that campaign.
Mm-hmm. Next, we go to Carrie in Augusta. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, good morning. I was just thinking about the fact that I don't base my vote on likability. I base my vote on trust and credibility. And when I look at these things, and I didn't happen to, in the instance of Saturday Night Live, I didn't see it, but I've seen replay a lot on the news. And I tell you, my credibility litmus test, can this person sit at the table with world leaders? Can this person be trusted to be in the in the war room to make, security decisions for my country? And I'm talking about Governor Palin, who is a heartbeat away from the presidency if they were elected. And I just went, oh, no. I just can't see this. And so my credibility test, I didn't need to be encouraged where my vote was going to go, but if I needed any encouragement, that really sent me in the way other direction.
Thank you, Carrie. We have just a very brief response, 30 seconds before news, Professor Foy.
Well, like I had mentioned before, mm-hmm. I think that Carrie's reaction to that is indicative that if you have your mind made up, these kinds of actions really aren't going to resonate in changing your mind. It's those voters who didn't have a strong opinion one way or the other that those kinds of moments may have had an effect on their decision.
We're talking about Sarah Palin's appearance on SNL over the weekend and the other presidential candidates or their surrogates also appearing on these comedy shows and what effect that has on the race for the White House. This is the Ideas Network. That was SNL cast member Amy Poehler singing that rap song on Saturday Night Live on Saturday night with the GOP vice presidential running mate Sarah Palin bobbing her head and doing a few dance moves from behind the Weekend Update desk. We're talking about Sarah Palin's appearance on SNL over the weekend and similar appearances from other presidential candidates or their surrogates over this whole election season. Just recently, we have also seen John McCain on David Letterman and Michelle Obama was on The Daily Show. Why are these comedy shows a serious part in the race for president? And do you think they do a candidate good? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Joseph Foy, professor of political science at UW-Waukesha, author of the book Homer Simpson Goes to Washington, American Politics Through Popular Culture. And back to the phones, Dave in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dave, you're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, a couple things, a couple of opinions and a question for your guest. Now, basically, the one part, I remember the Janet Reno bit, which I thought was very humorous, and I didn't think she had it in her. And the second thing is, I've noticed with Saturday Night Live, you know which way they're leaning, basically. I've noticed that basically the humor that they do for the Republicans is incoming, and the humor that that they portray the Democrats is more or less the humor towards or outgoing towards the party. So I'd like your guest to ask me what his opinion is. Who do you think's got a better sense of humor, Democrats or Republicans? Thank you.
All right. Did you follow that, Professor Foy?
I did, and actually, I also thought it was very funny when Will Ferrell, who did a very unflattering impersonation of Janet Reno, again is joined on stage, on set, on camera with the actual Janet Reno, and again, I think that did a lot to sort of disarm some of those unflattering portrayals of the Attorney General. In response to Dave's point about who, you know, which party has a better sense of humor, I really don't think actually it's a partisan issue. I really think it comes down to the particular candidates and what sorts of things really resonate. I've noticed that it's been incredibly hard for Saturday Night Live, for The Daily Show, for Colbert, and for a number of these other shows to really parody or mock Barack Obama. Because he comes across as more of a straight man rather than as part of a comedy. This can either work to his advantage or work against him, that he may continue to, you know, not have that sort of human appeal in the same way that some of the other candidates would. So I really don't think that it comes down to whether or not Republicans or Democrats have a better sense of humor or are easier to poke fun at. I think it really comes down to individual personalities and candidates.
Mm-hmm. Barack Obama was on Saturday Night Live, though, during the primaries. I remember he appeared in at a costume party and was wearing an Obama mask.
Yeah, that's right. And again, I mean, I think that really is indicative of exactly the straight sort of persona that he has. I mean, that the lines that were being delivered as he was talking to Amy Poehler, who was doing her Hillary Clinton impersonation, that the Clintons had invited people over for a Halloween costume party, and when Barack Obama came on and took off the Obama mask and was standing there, the Amy Poehler's Hillary Clinton says, so you came as yourself to a Halloween party. And his response was, look, I don't need to hide behind masks. I'm proud of who I am. I mean, there were comments that it really sounded as if the writers for Saturday Night Live didn't write these for him. It was out of the campaign. So it really didn't even become a mockery or a parody. It was just Barack Obama. It would have been interesting to see what he might have done on the show if he didn't have to cancel his follow-up appearance because of Hurricane Ike.
Oh, yeah. There was another skit that I recall. It was during the debates, the Democratic primary debates, but SNL was mocking the media, not Barack Obama, when the moderators of the debate or the press was asking Barack Obama if he wanted a pillow or if he wanted to put his feet up. Remember that one?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And in fact, there was really a turning point in the primaries when Hillary Clinton joined Amy Poehler on set. And it really began to highlight, at least what many critics and commentators noticed, was that it really began to highlight some of the disproportionately negative coverage and aggressive coverage of Hillary Clinton during the primaries. And many credit that moment as sort of one of those watershed events that took a sort of stumbling campaign at the time and re-injected it with new life as the media became relatively more self-critical as it turned the lens away from the candidates and back onto the media itself.
I'm laughing at one appearance that Barack Obama had on The Late Show with David Letterman, and this, again, was during the primary season, where he delivered a top 10 list. And again, this wasn't Barack Obama poking fun at himself, but one of the top 10 list was campaign promise number 8, appoint Mitt Romney Secretary of Looking Good.
Yeah, that's become a tradition, really, mm-hmm. amongst candidates, is to try to go on to Letterman and deliver a top 10 list. Howard Dean did it after the sort of crazy gaffe moment that he had, or the scream, as it's been come to known. And his number 10 remark was, you know, drink decaf. That's how he could turn his campaign around. And there are other candidates that will go on and deliver some of those top 10 lists. John Edwards has done it, and many other candidates. So again, it's sort of one of those rites of passage, so to speak, that candidates seem to engage in these kinds of things as one of the many stops, one of the many steps that they have to take. I mean, as Letterman told George W. Bush when he appeared on his show first, the road to the White House goes through Dave, mm-hmm. and so. And there may be some truth to that.
Louisa in Gardner, Maine, emailed us this. For me, as an independent voter, Ms. Palin's appearance on Saturday Night Live simply reinforced the fact that we've been laughing, of who we've been laughing at on SNL these past few weeks. There was no discernible difference in my eyes between her and Tina Fey's Sarah Palin in manner or in speech. I think if the idea was to dispel the image of Miss Palin as a laughingstock, it was a failure. It seemed like a desperate act on the behalf of a desperate candidate.
Yeah, and that gets back to my initial reaction to start the show about what the estimation was about her appearance. And I think that for a candidate who already has that sort of common person appeal like Sarah Palin initially had, I mean, that's what in part sparks her celebrity status amongst Republican voters and really gained and captured the attention of the media as well. That going on to these kinds of shows isn't going to have the same effect that a normally sort of distant person, somebody like Richard Nixon or somebody like Al Gore or somebody like Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, her appearance isn't going to resonate quite in the same way. And so I think Louisa has a very excellent point. What might be interesting is to see whether or not she would have had the same reaction to Joe Biden's appearance yesterday on the Ellen Show, where he went on as just a brief moment to meet and greet with Ellen and Julie Louis-Dreyfus, and then Julie Louis-Dreyfus got into a dunk tank for sort of breast cancer awareness, and Joe Biden threw a few softballs until he finally hit the target and dunked her to increase breast cancer awareness. And so those are that's another one of those stops where a candidate is trying to connect with a particular voting demographic in non-traditional means that may resonate in a way that it may be a little bit more disarming because it's not the Joe Biden we might normally expect on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Joseph Foy, a professor of political science at UW-Waukesha, about why the presidential campaigns are sending candidates and others to various talk shows and comedy shows. Talking about Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live, John McCain on David Letterman, Michelle Obama on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number, or send us an email, talk@wpr.org, wondering why these shows are becoming regular campaign stops in the race for the White House. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. This is The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7 o'clock, we will talk with a guest about the power of endorsements. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell endorsed Barack Obama over the weekend. That's gotten a lot of attention, but will it change anyone's vote? Will it affect the race for president? We'll talk about endorsements after 7 o'clock, and then after 7:30, we continue our series of congressional candidate forums. We will be welcoming in congressional hopeful John Gard, who is running as a Republican in the 8th Congressional District. That's after 7:30 this morning. Right now, we're talking about politics and popular culture and why the candidates often appear on comedy shows like SNL, Saturday Night Live, Sarah Palin, the latest on Saturday Night Live over the weekend. Joseph Foy, our guest, professor of political science at UW Waukesha. He's the author of a book on a similar topic, Homer Simpson Goes to Washington, American Politics Through Popular Culture. We welcome your input, your questions. How do you think the candidates do when they're on shows like this? Do you think it matters? Do you think it's a wise idea or not for people like Sarah Palin to appear on shows like Saturday Night Live? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jay in Columbus is next. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I think what happens is that the handlers of the candidates are so good at spin. And I've noticed in, like, the Bush administration, they withhold interviews from people who treat them bad, that most of the mainstream media doesn't really push issues, whereas the comedy shows, they can let loose. They don't have to do that. It's just kind of like a joke. And so you get more of both sides, and you get to see the fact that the guy that you think is a stuffy shirt actually does have a sense of humor.
Professor Foy.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good insight. In fact, I'm working with a colleague of mine, Timothy Dale, at UW Green Bay. I'm putting together a follow-up book to the Homer Simpson one, and one of the chapters that's being compiled is one that looks specifically at the notion that our clowns, our jesters, our comedians are the ones that are really talking truth to power in times of extreme crisis. It's difficult for us to sometimes in a very serious fashion deal with the gravity of problems with the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, security issues, Hurricane Katrina, the economic crisis. And so one of the ways that we end up as viewers sort of dealing with those is to turn to our jesters who are going to be able to confront those very serious issues in a way that's a bit disarming and in a way that really is able to strike a blow for truth in a way that the mainstream media just can't seem to break through into.
Yeah, Jon Stewart certainly has a reputation for doing that, doesn't he?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why his show has become so influential, and as many people have highlighted, that people who watch The Daily Show with regular frequency actually perform very well in terms of a civic literacy and their understanding of politics and the world around them.
Yeah, and he's credited too with young people watching The Daily Show more than they maybe follow other events in the news, and being influential along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the Pew Research Center did a study in 2004 to try to find the sort of viewership effect. And what they found was that individuals under the age of 30, 23% of them reported getting their news from network news, 23% reported of getting their political news from daily newspapers, and 21% reported that they got their primary political news from entertainment shows like The Daily Show, like The Colbert Report, like Letterman and Leno. And so these are certainly having a very profound effect in terms of socializing younger individuals into the political process.
Let's listen to Jon Stewart interviewing Michelle Obama recently.
Are you the glue, as this is going on, how do you remain sort of the center of the family? Is that the job, to keep everybody grounded?
That's part of it. I've stopped reading and watching a lot of stuff.
You're a lot like Sarah Palin.
So he got in a lick on Sarah Palin too.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that again, this is why I don't think that Sarah Palin's performance on Saturday Night Live is going to do much to really to help her in the same way that it would other candidates. Michelle Obama did come across to many people as being somebody who was unapproachable, somebody who was important in Senator Obama's life, but somebody that we really didn't know too closely. And so being able to go and do that interview with Jon Stewart really opens her up. She becomes, again, that sort of that human being who deals with family issues and political issues and everyday life. Whereas sort of the mockery of Sarah Palin was, well, look, she is just like everybody else in America. She's not reading daily newspapers, and her cover for that was to just say, well, I read all of them, because she couldn't name a particular one in the very disastrous interview that she had with Katie Couric. And so I think that Michelle Obama's appearance on The Daily Show is going to do a lot more to help her image and standing than it would Sarah Palin going on to Saturday Night Live. There may be a lot of people. We may think it's very funny, but it may, as one of the emailer, Louisa, had pointed out, just may reinforce those fears that people have about her.
Matt in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty good.
A very pretty sunrise right now. I wanted to follow up what he was saying about our jesters speaking truth to power. I was watching the Letterman show when McCain came on, and here's a guy who's a comedian who makes jokes for a living, who grilled him harder than any journalist has the entire campaign on a lot of different issues, and took it more seriously and got, well, depending on your viewpoint, better or worse answers. And he's a comedian. What does that say about our journalists these days?
Well, I think more than anything, it says that they're afraid that we've entered into this era where spin ideology and partisanship is so rampant from campaigns, from the political parties, that the media itself has become very timid because they don't want to isolate or push aside any voters. And you know, our comedians, because they're entertainers, because they will admit that they're not out there to give us unbiased news, they're able to actually confront the difficult questions without having to take the heat of, you know, well, they're biased or they're pushing for one particular candidate. They don't have the same expectations or public pressures that the mainstream media does, which allows them to do those types of interviews.
So, go ahead.
Here's what bothers me is that journalism isn't about fairness. It's about getting at the truth. A great scene in All the President's Men where Bob Woodward's character says that he's a Republican, and the other guy stares at him like, you got to be kidding me. But the reality is he just wants to get at the truth, and journalism shouldn't care about one side or the other. They should care about getting at the truth of something, and it looks to me like they've completely lost their spine, and here's a comedian doing a better job than they do.
Absolutely, and I think the sad reality, one that a colleague of mine, Dick Flannery at UW-Sheboygan, writes about in the Homer Simpson book, is that it sadly has not become about truth. It's not about really doing the job of democracy that the media was intended to do. That instead, it's about ratings. It's about being able to sell advertising time. It's about being able to attract a large enough audience where you can stay relevant and stay important. And in order to do that, you have to really walk a very fine line so that you don't upset advertisers. One of the best movies out and available is Good Night and Good Luck, where there's a very critical look at the market effect on media and its slow sort of erosion, this drive for ratings and for profit, the slow erosion that begins to take away the media's ability to really become that watchdog fourth branch of our government.
Thanks, Matt, for the call. Enjoy the sunrise. Rhonda in Minocqua. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, I do have to agree completely with your guest. Good Night and Good Luck should be required viewing in every high school in this country. My daughter had no idea that any of this had ever gone on, and this was when she was a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. And I made her sit down and watch the movie, and it was like, oh, my gosh. More to the point, appearance has become everything in this country. It's no longer about the substance, the actual message. I mean, when Madonna's divorce makes headline news on CNN above politics or anything else, what does that say about this country?
Yeah,
it's getting a little frightening.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that that I do want to say is that I don't sort of want to underplay or to minimize the important role that comedy and entertainment can play in actually fostering really strong democratic criticism. I mean, we can see back to the traditions of classical democracy in Greece, Athenian playwright Aristophanes becoming very critical in the play the Knights of the Athenian despot Cleon and mocking and parodying him by replacing him with a sausage seller and in a very ribald play is able to make that kind of criticism, which can be healthy for democratic dialogue. I think that the real problem is, as Rhonda points out, is that when we begin to again enlarge those sort of trivial details and we get caught up so much in this politics of celebrity that we end up losing the important dialogue that underplays it, that's where democracy itself may begin to suffer.
And we'll have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Thank you so much for having me. And again, thanks for all your wonderful callers.
Yeah, we sure have a lot of them. Joseph Foy, professor of political science at UW Waukesha, author of Homer Simpson Goes to Washington, American Politics Through Popular Culture. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Thanks to Rob and Bill Martins for on-air production and direction. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.